Hello?
My name is Talking Tina, and I'm going to kill you.
Who the hell was that? Well, that's Talkie Tina, the killer doll featured on the series The Twilight Zone. She was probably Chucky's grandma. Remember Chucky?
Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play?
Ooh, but he did have a nasty side.
You stupid bitch, you filthy slut! Did you fuck with me?
What's this all about? Well, it's not really about sci-fi or horror. It's about something a little more nuanced. The bizarre. Chucky and Talkie Tina were both dolls. Kids' toys that should be innocent and wholesome. But they were sinister, malevolent, homicidal. Something very bizarre is happening right now on the Texas shore. Creepy dolls are washing up by the dozens, and nobody knows why. But I do. Stay with me, and I'll solve the mystery.
The Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry!
Larry. Fucking Larry.
Larry from That Larry Show.
For men with balls.
Take off your pants.
Larry, get into bed now.
Larry.
Larry.
Larry. Larry.
Come on, Larry. Larry. Larry.
All my life, I've had a fascination with the bizarre. Almost everybody's into the weird and the supernatural, right? Vampires and werewolves, aliens and demons and ghosts, and that's cool. People have been enthralled by those legends for thousands of years. Depending on your beliefs, some or none or all of those things are pure fiction. But it's still fun to ponder them. They're great fodder for campfire stories and books and movies. Because all of them have some anthropomorphic underpinning, huh? The creepy creatures or spirits. Well, they're hybrid humans with intelligence and some purpose. Generally to kill or at least scare the shit out of us. The bizarre is an adjacent realm, a much smaller realm, but to me it's just as satisfying as all those other genres of weirdness. And this wonderfully bizarre event is unfolding on the Gulf Shore of Texas for some time now. Dolls have been washing up on the beach. Not Barbie or Ken dolls or Cabbage Patch or G.I. Joes, no, these are all baby dolls. Some are missing limbs. Some have barnacles and snails growing out of their eye sockets, and people are freaking. Imagine some five-year-old just wading into the water when he bumps up against one of those. Might take years of therapy to straighten him out. Dolls are second only to clowns on the bizarre scale. But then again, maybe not. Everyone wants to punch a creepy clown in the face. Maybe smash his head with a carnival mallet. Because clowns, no matter how goofily made up, have a streak of malevolence, right? As a kid, they never made me laugh. They only made me wary. Why does any adult want to wear a disguise and then get close to other people's kids? The entire premise is wrong from jump. But if the clown does get out of line, nobody would think twice about decking him. Or administering a lethal injection, as the state of Illinois did to the killer clown, John Wayne Gacy. For some reason, the jack-in-the-box clown never seemed creepy. I've conversed with his beachball-sized head atop the menu hundreds of times in drive-thrus around the country. It never seemed the least bit peculiar. Jack was like a sunny day. When I was a kid in New York, the garbage men, subsequently rebranded as sanitation engineers, they had a thing for dolls. Not sure why, but maybe 4 out of 5 city garbage trucks had baby dolls bungee strapped to their grills. Of course, those guys were picking them out of the trash cans, but I think those dudes had a solid feel for the bizarre. They never chose crap dolls, you know, ones that were just solid soft rubber or plastic. They always picked high-end dolls, ones with articulated body parts that could be positioned in crazy poses. Sometimes their arms were tight at their sides and their legs were together, tethered to the grill of the truck like Joan of Arc about to be burned at the stake. Sometimes all four limbs were splayed as if they were falling, or positioned like figure skaters or surfers. I recall one in the Superman pose with an extended fist slicing into the future. They'd even tied a hanky on like a little cape. Often the dolls had realistic eyes. They'd open and close as the truck rumbled over potholes on the never-maintained streets of Queens. Sometimes they'd have a neck that allowed the head to joggle as if it was having a seizure, like that robot Pris when she fritzed out in Blade Runner. Whenever I was on the street and heard a garbage truck approach, and they always had a distinctive sound, I'd turn and look for the doll in the grill and was rarely disappointed. There was seldom a teddy bear or other stuffed toy. Those guys understood bizarre. They also understood kids. More than once, as they made their rounds, they'd put on a show for us kids. The guy in the back would take 3 or 4 empty gallon milk jugs, tighten down the caps, and then chock the wheels with them. Then the driver would ease forward as the caps blew off at probably 1,000 feet per second, and the whole block wondered if we were under artillery fire. The kids were thrilled. The garbage man would laugh, hop back on his perch in the rear, and away they'd go. The insane naked doll with the orange hair, blinking eyes, and wobbly head leading the way, like some weathered figurehead on the Flying Dutchman. There was only one word that fully captured that scene. Bizarre. The doll's figurehead custom probably ended when they stopped calling them garbage men. Some pencil neck fresh out of business school ran the sanitation department and wrote a best practices memo banning customization or defacing of department vehicles. And the milk jugs under the wheels, well, those plastic caps probably perforated the door of some bureaucrat's Mercedes, and presto, that was verboten. A safety issue. Which it probably was, but still, none of us was ever shot by the caps. We knew enough to stand aside. Bizarre was part of my attraction to Los Angeles. Unlike East Coast cities, or even ones in Northern California, LA is in a race with Las Vegas for which has the highest bizarre quotient. It used to be a town with a mentality like those garbage men. Let's do something nutty that will make people look twice and scratch their heads. Why? For the fuck of it, that's why. New York, well, it always had a stick up its ass about maintaining dignity. Every building had to be made of brick able to withstand an atomic bomb. In LA, you'd see a stately Art Deco hotel, and next door to it was a 40-foot bullwinkle, and nobody gave a shit. Well, some assholes did. In Studio City, which is on the eastern edge of the San Fernando Valley, some chooches got bent out of shape about a sign for a car wash, and it had been there forever. The big gimmick in LA used to be, and in some places still is, car washes by hand instead of those ineffective gas station drive-thrus. You know, the ones with the soapy dancing tongues that mostly just smear the dirt. As an eye-grabber, there was this enormous hand holding a soapy sponge, which said, "Hand car wash." How enormous was it? Well, bolted to the top of the sponge is a full-size 57 Corvette. The whole thing was 26 feet high. The Karens wanted it gone, but after a prolonged fight in the courts, they compromised, removed the wrist on the hand, and cut it down to a lower height. It was advertising a fucking car wash, not the Louvre. What the hell kind of sign should they have had for it? I'll post a picture of the hand car wash sign at the show page, thatlarryshow.com. You can see it for yourself. You can also see those dolls washing up in Texas and some mannequins I'm going to tell you about. For years and years, a battalion of mysterious mannequins guarded a Toyota dealership in North Hollywood. The place was huge and multi-leveled. It was snugged up against the side of the 101 freeway, an insanely busy road. Tethered to the rooftop and the balustrades and scattered around the lot were dozens of mannequins. There were men, women, and children. It became sort of a trademark for the business. The owner had started with just one or two mannequins and got some sales action, so he kept buying them. He even had a staffer dress them. Soccer clothes when World Cup was in session, shit like that. I drove past that place literally thousands of times, and I always had to look. In the evening, when the wind kicked up, sometimes they would sway and wave. It was eerie, had an apocalyptic feel. Never made me want to venture into the place, but definitely qualified as bizarre. I only set foot in there once, one of the few times I was shopping for a new car instead of late model used. I saw this Avalon that looked pretty good, and the sales guy took me for a test drive. Along the way, he suddenly announced he desperately needed to take a leak. We went into a jack-in-the-box. Once inside, he looks toward the back and says, "Holy shit, that's Bob Hope." I looked back and sure enough, saw the golf cap and the ski jump nose. Hope was reading a newspaper, nursing a cup of coffee. This car salesman heads for the men's room and stalls at Hope's table. Before he could ask for an autograph or whatever annoyance he was about to commit, Hope, without making eye contact, clearly said from the corner of his mouth, "Piss off." I laughed like hell. And I did not buy the car. Even though brand new, it had pinstriping. Never a good sign. They don't pinstripe at the factory. So what was it doing on the new car lot? Probably had some flaw I missed. Dealers try to jazz up dogs with pinstriping as a distraction. Mannequins nearly top dolls for bizarre, but not quite. And for the same reason, clowns are also in second place. Creepy baby dolls take the cake for a vital element of bizarreness. Is that a word? Well, it is now. Incongruity. There's nothing more innocent and helpless and appealing than a baby. Even Jesus, a mostly peaceful guy, said he would personally destroy anyone who hurt a child. So when you see a very accurate facsimile of a baby in some creepy context, well, that pushes the bizarre factor to the moon. But back to mannequins. For years in New York, I had a lot of clients in the apparel and luxury goods business. Chanel and Ralph Lauren, Bally shoes, and so on. But no matter how IN they were still called garmentos, and they were a pretty fun bunch. The clothing district in New York was on 7th Avenue, and that's where most of their offices were. Those guys were amazing. They could look at your suit and from 5 yards out tell you which knitting mill it came from in Italy. They could eyeball your shirt, give you an accurate thread count, tell you if it was Egyptian or Sea Islander or Pima cotton. Best of all, if you were friends, they'd sell you merchandise at cost. And the markups were insane. For years, I dressed like royalty for very little money. And they had mannequins. Lots of mannequins. They were a very important part of their business. You can't put nice duds on a crash test dummy. The manufacturers ran ads for their mannequins in the apparel trade magazines. Companies gave them names, and one that was uber bizarre was called Shy Boy. Shy Boy looked sort of like Elvis might have looked at age 14. He was posed seated with both legs to one side. It was a position only women tend to assume. He had a look on his face that was kind of petulant. Had there been a talk bubble, it would have said, "How could you?" At that time, I'd been having a running gag with a guy in my office. We'd prank each other with all kinds of shit. Cancel each other's reservations, have takeout delivered we didn't order, crazy glue each other's phones, you get the idea. I asked a friend in the art department to enlarge Shy Boy's picture to near poster size. Then he made me 7 or 8 dozen copies. With another Confederate, long after hours, we completely papered my friend's office with Shy Boy. Not only the walls, but the floor, ceiling, windows, and his desk. It was very Andy Warhol. The next morning, when he walked into his office, we could hear his "what the fuck" in the next zip code. Then he started laughing. Then word got around the company and it became an attraction for a few days. He even made it into the corporate newsletter. Everybody loved Shy Boy and the all-Shy Boy office. We had struck a chord with the humorous side of Bizarre instead of the sinister side. Even the top brass thought it was funny as hell and visited once word got around. They had a sense of humor. Or maybe they didn't. And didn't give a shit because my pal and I were making them buckets of money. Eventually, I helped him tear down all the Shy Boys, but one. That one, we sent back to the art department and had them make a foam core cutout. We'd bring life-size Shy Boy to restaurants and saloons, give him his own seat or bar stool. Strangers would buy him drinks. People thought we were insane, and we were. We even took Shy Boy to Atlantic City and sat him at a blackjack table and alternated playing hands for him. The dealer thought it was funny as fuck. Even the pit boss laughed, and those guys never laugh. Before there was Shy Boy, there was Kirby. A friend of mine at college had somehow acquired a stuffed squirrel. Some master taxidermist must have done the job because it looked very much alive. Jeff would find a tree on campus, and when unobserved, he'd plant Kirby on a branch a little above his head. Then he'd wait for some girls to stroll by, and he'd get up on tippy-toe and talk to Kirby. That usually got the girls' attention. They'd watch for a little while, and Jeff would marvel about how tame the squirrel was, and then wonder aloud if the rodent might be hungry. He'd offer it a peanut. And when Kirby didn't move, he'd say, "Don't be scared, little guy. I won't hurt you." Well, by now, the girls are fascinated. Then Jeff would gently pet Kirby's head with his forefinger, but at the same time, push Kirby out of the tree. Of course, he fell like a stone. Jeff would gasp, "Oh my God, he's dead!" The girls would be horrified and usually make tracks. Then Jeff would laugh till he puked, or maybe he'd grab Kirby and chase them with it. Even the name was inspired. Kirby. The Bizarre. You gotta love it. You can make your own bazaar, or in L.A., there's always been a lot of it, sitting around for your viewing pleasure. Restaurants shaped like derbies, 40-foot-high acrylic donuts, hot dog stands that look like a hot dog. That's one of the things I'll miss about this place. Architectural gimmicks and whimsy. Other cities take themselves way too seriously, but then again, a lot of those roadside attractions have vanished and not been replaced. It's like L.A. sobered up. Time to go. So what about those dolls washing up on that Texas beach, huh? Seems the place is a vector for peculiar flotsam and jetsam. Years before the dolls, dozens of Garfield, you know that orange cartoon cat? Dozens of corded Garfield phones were mysteriously appearing on that beach. What the hell? In time, somebody found a container that had fallen off a freighter, snagged on some rocks, and finally rusted through. Presto, Garfield phones. As I like to say, there are no mysteries. But now, as promised, I'll tell you where those dolls are coming from. There's a long-retired New York City garbage man. His name is Gus. He snatched up most of those dolls when management banned them. Wasn't sure just what he'd do with them, but he was a bit of a hoarder. And along with his sense of humor, he had a kind of a sentimental streak. As a young man, he'd been a sailor in the U.S. Navy. Best years of his life. He's drifting out there in the warm, calm Gulf of Mexico right now on a ramshackle houseboat that lists to the port side until a squeaky bilge pump kicks on. He knows the hull is losing a battle to rot, but he really doesn't give a shit. Below deck is a big lazarette where he stores the dolls and other mementos. Dinner is usually nuked Hungry Man chicken or Dinty Moore beef stew. Sometimes if heating is too much effort, he'll just fork cold Spam out of the can. If he feels mischievous after supper, he'll lumber down the ladder and retrieve a doll. Sometimes he can recall which truck the doll was strapped to and the guys that were on the crew. He grabs a bottle of 10 High bourbon, only $8.59 plus tax. Sour mash blended with neutral spirits. He gets them by the case when he gets provisions in Matagorda. He climbs back up to the deck and eases himself into a pitted aluminum beach chair with frayed fiesta-colored straps. Pulls a stogie from his shirt pocket. Sparks it with a corroded Zippo he got while on shore leave in Vietnam back in 72. He takes a deep slug of whiskey. He squints at the horizon and hefts the battered, grimy doll that spent a decade touring the Lower East Side from the grill of a Mack garbage truck. He thumbs the eyes. One still opens and closes when he tilts her head, although it looks like it has a cataract. The other eye is fused shut. Her head still moves a little bit, only to one side. There's a ragged piece of cloth around her waist. He takes a puff of his El Producto blunt and hefts the doll by one leg. He draws it back behind his shoulder and flips it, spinning cartwheels until it splashes down. Go, little dolly. Swim with the tide. Go. Creep somebody out. Maybe I'll see you in a newspaper in a week or two. Mystery solved. An old man with a quirky sense of humor. He's got a firm grasp of the bizarre, but a waning one on life. As he takes another pull of 10 High, he tips his head back in the sun and says to himself, it could have been worse. I could have retired in New York. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. I thought this might be a good time to step back from the Sturm und Drang of the real world. Hope you enjoyed this journey to the bizarre. Follow the show between episodes on Facebook and Twitter. Just plug That Larry Show into the search bar and you will find it. There are also direct links on the homepage. You'll discover hundreds of other episodes at the homepage, thatlarryshow.com. And while you're there, click the subscribe button so you never miss one. If you like what you just heard, you can help me keep the lights on while I fight commies. Click the Patreon or PayPal buttons, or donate through the post office box. That address is also on the show page. I know times are tough. You can help out by leaving a 5-star review wherever you download. And tell your friends about this show. Send them a link. If you want to write, the address is thatlarryshow@gmail.com. And there are still some of those banging LUTFA magnetic stickers. LUTFA, of course, stands for Leave Us the Fuck Alone. Isn't that what freedom-loving people really want? Take a look at one at the show page. Only 10 bucks or 3 for 25, and be sure to mention LUTFA with your order. Slap one on your vehicle and tell the world where you're at, and it helps spread the word about the show. I'll see you next Wednesday, or thereabouts, and until that time, take no shit.